All right, this is podcast number 2, Friday, May 10th, covering chapters 5 through 9. We're going to start with the summary of the book. So we'll start in chapter 5. It's when Hoppy and PK, they get off the train, and Hoppy takes PK back to like his place or his house and tells him about the boxing match. It's pretty much they spend their day, and Hoppy takes him shopping with like the shop master, and he's like arguing that like the coin isn't right, isn't that?
PK gets some fresh kicks.
Yeah.
Hoppy
yeah.
Gives him some new
and they were like accepting his old taxis.
Yeah, that's what it was. They were accepting the old coins back. PK got new shoes, mm-hmm. And then
also PK was given a sucker, which is new to him.
He's never had a sucker. And then at the end, before they leave the shop, they give him another sucker. So now he says, "Now I have two to have for the fight." So mm-hmm. He planned on saving those for later that night for the fight that Hoppy was going to be in. And then they went to like the bar, the drink restaurant, where they met Jackhammer Schmidt, who mm-hmm. Hoppy was going to fight, and then like. Him and Hoppy were kind of like throwing like word jabs at each other, saying like, "Oh, I'm gonna knock you out. I'm gonna lay you out."
Jackhammer was doing most of the insulting, but then Hoppy kind of came back at him at the end and made him really mad.
Yeah, like Jackhammer was like trying to egg Hoppy on, but then like right before they left, Hoppy said something, and Jackhammer was like, "Oh, I'll kill you."
Yeah, he said something like, "It's a good thing I'm not fighting your mouth because that's a heavyweight."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then. So they go back to Hoppy's place, and they were talking, saying the Hoppy was just drinking water, and he revealed to PK that he'd gotten a letter that he had to go and serve in the army, mm-hmm. So he'd have to leave PK, and PK was sad and asked why did he have to go, but Hoppy really has no choice because it was like a letter saying that you must go serve your country, no ifs or buts.
Yeah, he was drafted in, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he got the draft letter.
And also, Hoppy reveals his strategy for fighting Jackhammer mm-hmm. to PK, where he's just going to punch him in the eye, numerous times until it swells.
So then he can't see.
Yeah.
Because
he's a big fighter.
Yeah, because they say, like, body jabs and stuff won't work for him, because, like, his stomach gut is, like,
the
so
reason
huge.
Jackhammer Smith is because he can hold Jackhammer by himself with his stomach.
Unit.
And he's also counting on the fact that it's very hot, so Jackhammer, he's hoping, will get dehydrated in the last two rounds and won't be able to fight.
Like, adding on to, like, the dehydrated thing, like, Hoppy's, like, drinking, like, a ton of water while they're just sitting at his place and PK's asking him questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hoppy's definitely in it for the long run.
Yeah, Hoppy's, like, trying to say that, like, this fight's gonna be, like, an endurance fight. Like, it's probably gonna go to the last round. Mm-hmm. It's more who can stay hydrated and like stay like can be like fit for the longest and can like stand. And then chapter six is when they actually go to the fight.
Yeah
they like when they first get to the rugby field.
Yeah the rugby field, and they say like the rugby field, it's just a rugby field with like a boxing ring in the middle. Mm-hmm. With just like lights all around it, and they just put stands up on the inside.
They had like 2,000 people there in the stands.
It was like the miners on one side, and then the railway men. Like the miners are cheering for Jackhammer, and then the railway men are cheering for Hoppy. Mm-hmm. And that's where PK and Hoppy, they meet Big Heady. And then
PK spends the fight just sitting with Big Heady while they watch.
Big Heady's getting plastered. She has a bottle of brandy and a picnic basket.
Yeah.
She go through a bottle and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like PK complains like that she like her breath reeks of like alcohol.
Yeah, he says that at some point he says that her breath almost knocked him out.
Yeah.
That's when she's sleeping.
Oh yeah, that's later.
Yeah, and then
you also find out that she's Irish too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's half Irish and half.
She's Irish from
Boer, right?
Black. Yeah, like yeah.
Yeah.
She says that when she's drunk she's Irish.
Yeah, because it's a lot easier to talk with her Irish tongue when she's drunk.
And then like the actual fight, they like say Jackhammer's like 200 something pounds, and then Hoppy's only like 145. And they just talked about, like, Hoppy, he was doing his plan, like, he was going to go for the eye. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of went going for the eye, and he just kept hitting, like, he said body shots wouldn't work. It was more going to be about trying to get, like, head shots in on him. So mm-hmm. he was trying to, like, punch his eye closed, so then he wouldn't be able to see like when Hoppy was gonna come at him.
Yeah.
There were a couple hangups, like when Hoppy got knocked down. I feel like they even said in the book that probably one of the saving graces of him getting knocked down is that Jackhammer wouldn't go back to his corner, so they couldn't start the count.
Yeah.
And so he got a lot of extra time to collect himself before he got back up.
Like, they said the ref had to, like, break him up because, like, he kept falling down and people wouldn't go away. And they said, like, the ref was, like, a tiny midget and Jackhammer, like, hit him one time and it sent the ref flying.
Then Jackhammer was, like, continuing to, like, grab onto Hoppy during the fight.
Yeah. And then wasn't it the 14th or the 15th round, the final round?
There's only 10 rounds.
Oh, sorry, it was 10, yeah.
Yeah.
Where they say Hoppy punched Jackhammer, and then Hoppy fell, and he got back up, and Jackhammer was just standing there, and then Jackhammer just kind of fell down.
Mm-hmm. Or, well, it's because Hoppy got knocked down.
Yeah.
And Jackhammer was standing there over him.
He ready for the uppercut.
Yeah, Hoppy just
launched himself
up with an uppercut.
And talked him away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was just, like, Hoppy, he was making him think that, oh, I'm down for the count. But when Jackhammer, like, looked away or wasn't expecting, Hoppy just came up with an uppercut and sent him, put him on the ground, and he didn't get up after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was kind of, like, the final blow that I think Hoppy had been waiting for, like, an opportune moment.
Yeah.
One thing I was curious about is, why did they keep putting the Vaseline?
It helps stop the bleeding. And also fighters will put Vaseline on their skin because it makes it so that it's more likely for the hits to kind of glance off instead of just being a straight impact.
Yeah, like, Cruz, have you seen Hunger Games, like, the movie? Yeah. Like, you know when, like, they put, like, that gel stuff on, like, the cuts and stuff they have? That's kind of what that's like Vaseline. It, like, stops the healing and it helps the skin heal faster.
It stops the bleeding, yeah.
Yeah, that's what, like, if you watch most boxing matches, they'll have one over there and they'll just cover up the cuts, like, on their face.
In the eyes a lot.
Yeah. So he probably had, like, cuts and stuff all over his eyebrows.
And so then, after the fight, PK kind of just falls asleep while they're heading back to the train. And then he wakes up on the train again and there's a note attached to him
with 10 shillings from the bet that he had won with Hoppy.
Yeah.
And it was like a note from Hoppy saying
he had to go, but he's like, I know you're going to be the welterweight champion of the world someday.
And I think PK really doesn't know if he'll ever see Hoppy again. Like, that could be like the last note or letter that he'll ever get from Hoppy.
Yeah, I think he talked about him worrying about that a bit too.
Mm-hmm. And that he'd only knew him
for just over 24 hours
of his life.
One of the best friends.
Yeah, it felt like it was like one of the people that meant the most to him over his entire life. And then later that it's Big Hetty and they're in the train. Is it? And
she's asleep on the bottom bunk.
And she, like you said, she kind of like falls.
Yeah, he went to go like
eat
breakfast.
That she's like
falling out of, and
she's like
her head's getting
red,
and there's like bubbles forming.
Yeah, so he pulls her all the way off the bed, so she's not hanging off. But then
she was,
but in doing that, she got stuck on the floor, and she couldn't.
The most they can do is when they get to the next station, they lift her up so she's sitting instead of laying on her back, and then she can't stand up.
She can't stand up. She grabbed for like her left breast, which probably means
she was so
hot and she was so exhausted. Like, if you're bigger like that, like,
she might have had a heart attack.
Yeah.
On her breast.
Also, back on page 120, when because he says it's not you, Leafling, it's old Hetty. Like, she's the one I'm crying for. What the hell, PK? What do you say? Might as well die eating than as starving. It kind of sounds like she already knows. Yeah, I'm probably gonna get a heart attack.
She's probably gonna go.
It's
like
probably like getting pretty close.
Cause she probably said no. She was hot and she was sweating a lot, and she like it said, she probably went into cardiac arrest, and there was nothing she could do about it. And like at the end of the thing, when the men were coming back with some to see if they could get her up, it said Big Hetty could be moved now, which pretty much meant that she had died.
And this gave Big Hetty and PK a lot of time to talk about Hetty's life and what she did back in the day.
She
was abused by her old boyfriend, who was a boxer, but not a very good one, so she let him win the fights that they had because it made him feel good, made him feel powerful, and gave him a sense of reassurance, which is a little messed up.
Yeah.
But I remember reading an article a while ago that the doctors in like the 1950s and 40s thought that a man beating his wife was therapeutic.
Yeah.
And it was good for the man, which is not at all true.
Yeah. And so then when PK gets off the train, he meets his mom, who he hasn't seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
And he says that she looks thin, but she still looks mostly the same. And then she seems a lot different, though, because she's now a born-again Christian, quote-unquote, which he remembers that Hetty said that there's nothing good to come from them. And PK sort of starts feeling lonely because he feels like his mom isn't the person he used to know, and he feels like he's all alone because Hoppy left him, and Hetty just died, and earlier Grandpa Chook had been killed, so he felt like he was all alone in the world.
He's lost a lot of people. So after, like, moving on from that, like, he gets to the train station, and he meets his mom, and all he really cares about is where's his nanny at.
Like, he's expecting to see her.
Because she'd taken care of him his entire life, and she wasn't there, so he didn't know what had happened to her, and that's really all he was concerned about when he got home. And it said, like, he noticed that everything in their home was the same as, like, the nursery where he was with his nanny.
His mom wasn't really happy about that, though.
No.
Yeah, she's trying to support the family with her loom business and making dresses and all that, but all he cares about is his nanny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's there for him after a long time, and Hoppy and PK can't really just accept that she's gone for so long and then just comes back into her life expecting everything to be the same.
Especially when his nanny had taken over the role of his mother while his mom was gone, and she had ended up meaning a lot to him, and then she's just gone.
Yeah. But it says, when he went back to his mom, he asked, like, where his nanny was, and his mom finally told him, like, she went back to
Zululand.
Because she didn't want to take off, like, her...
Any of her charms.
Yeah, her charms.
She said that she was, like, a heretic, and she was communing with the devil she called the witch doctor to cure his bedwater.
Yeah, so there was people that probably didn't want her there anymore, or if she was going to stay there, she had to get rid of those, and she probably just figured, I'm just going to go back to Zululand just to get away from all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, while PK, he climbs that cliff, and he sits on the top, and he talks about feeling really sad, but then he meets Doc, and he starts to feel better, because he starts to feel...
accepted.
Yeah.
Like, someone's talking to him, actually.
Yeah, he finds someone who he can understand and who understands him.
Yeah.
He kind of filled the place with Hoppy, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it could be, like, the new Hoppy.
And he doesn't have a father, as far as we know, so it's a good thing for him. He has a sort of father figure to look up to who's in his life now.
And then, like, Doc asks if he can take a photograph of him and call it Boy Sitting on Rock.
Well, yeah, he already took the picture.
He already did, but he asked him if he could, like, use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then PK was curious, like, why he had, like, the cactus in his bag and why it wasn't poking him.
Mm-hmm.
He taught him a lot of scientific stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff about succulents.
And then, that pretty much explains it. And then he, like, PK now, he's working for Doc, and it...
And
Doc's gonna help teach him and stuff, like, with music and stuff. But like, in exchange, he made the agreement with his mom, like, he's gonna work, like, PK will work for Doc in exchange for, like, education.
It's also a good way for, like, Doc to get PK almost, like, away from his mom, or for PK to get away from his mom.
Yeah. So then we probably move on to, like, the questions now.
One last thing about Doc is, I think it's gonna give PK a purpose.
Yeah.
Like we said, Hoppy did last time. Was that he gave him a purpose, something to work for, and now that he's going to help Doc with a lot of his stuff, it's going to give him another purpose.
Yeah. And then, so, Jackson, you're the discussion, or the leader?
Yeah. So, my first question is, why do you guys think that the Runics hated the Boer so much?
Because they came in and colonized their land.
Yeah, it was their land, and then they came in, and they just kind of took it from them.
Mm-hmm. Expected everything to be
fine. The Runics were hated so... were so hated by the Boers, they hated the Boers. Yeah. I said that wrong. And then, why do you think that Big Hetty wasn't, like, really as discriminated against as any other Runic? Because she was from...
I feel like it was England. Probably because they said that she was half African and half Irish. So she was probably black, and so they didn't really discriminate against her as much. And she seemed like she was a friendly person to everyone.
Like, when she wasn't, like, drunk, she seemed like she was friendly.
Wait, was she half African or half Dutch? Because aren't the Boers Dutch? Or...
No, the Ruiners are the Dutch.
Yeah. Oh, I thought Ruiners were Englishmen for some reason.
Because PK's Dutch.
Ah, I thought he was an Englishman. Alright. Then, why do you think that Hoppy never said goodbye to PK?
Because it said, like, PK fell asleep, and I'm sure Hoppy, he didn't want to, like, wake him up and disturb him. I'm sure he just said, he kind of, like, said the goodbyes, like, the day before and explained to him what was going to happen. I'm sure he just was like, I'm just going to let him sleep, because I'm sure if he's awake when I leave, it'll probably be, like, dramatic for him.
He probably felt it would be a lot easier
to just
leave quietly.
And just leave him a note.
Sometimes goodbyes are final. He didn't want to make it seem like that. He wanted to say, it's almost like he'll see him tomorrow or see him the next day.
Yeah. Then, do you think that PK's mom had any other motives behind kicking out Nanny other than just, like, her following, like, what God told her to do?
She probably didn't like how she had taken over PK, the role of PK's mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she was almost, like, a little jealous there. Or maybe even angry at her.
So, PK's mom was in a concentration camp, right?
Yes.
That's right.
But then she was lucky to not die from, like, the disease and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, next question.
Then, why does the professor bring PK along with him as a helper when he was looking for succulents? Like, why do you think that?
Maybe just was asking a bunch of questions. He was curious.
He probably saw how intelligent PK was.
Maybe thinks he can make him, like, an apprentice or something to him. Like,
and also, the professor says, the professor is somebody who can't captivate a room of five-year-olds. He mentions that. Mm-hmm. And he was intrigued by PK because he's only five or six. And PK was actually interested in what he was saying and wanted to learn more. Plus, he doesn't seem like he's teaching anymore. And teaching is, for an old professor, it's something that they enjoy.
Well, he was a music teacher, so, like, he was teaching music lessons to, like, a lot of the five-year-old kids.
It was really... It was so much opportunity for him to, like, teach someone about the cactuses and stuff that he was really loved doing. But then, of course, no one else was really interested in it.
Yeah.
He knows so much about it, but he can't find anybody to teach. All
right.
Then one last thing is, one thing that I kind of noticed throughout the story so far is that, like, pretty much anyone that kind of has a role model or, like, someone close to PK winds up, like, or, like, kind of teaches a valuable, like, life lessons. Have in some way been, like, taken away from him. Like, Nanny was sent back to Zululand, Hoppy had to go fight in World War II, and then Big Hetty, like, died, Mr. Cook, or Mr. Cook.
Grandpa Chook
was killed. Stoned.
Yeah. I just
think... like, do you guys think the pattern's gonna, like, continue on?
I don't think it'll continue with, like, Doc, because I think Doc will stick around for a while and teach him some valuable lessons.
Yeah, it seems like Doc is gonna be there for a while. Yeah.
But I just think maybe, like, the life lessons that those people, the PKs, lost... like, the life lessons they've given, like, maybe those traumatic events that happened to the people, or, like, PK losing him, maybe that'll make, like, keep it stuck in PK's mind to always remember to do this, keep, like, do it like this, kind of like a recipe, like, just do this, you can become really successful by that.
There's a quote that I know of, it's like, everybody dies and goes away at some point, but if one person remembers you, you never really die at all,
because
they remember what you said, and they help you. They remember.
And then that's all my questions. Yeah.
So then, all right.
And I was the bridge builder, and I found a poem related to this. It's called "The Doors of Daring" by Henry Van Dyke. The mountains that enfold the vale, with walls of granite steep and high, invite the fearless foot to scale their stairway towards the sky. The restless, deep, dividing sea that flows and foams from shore to shore calls to its sunburned chivalry, push out, set sail, explore. And all the bars at which we fret, that seem to prison and control, are but the doors of daring, a set ajar before the soul. Say not, too poor, but freely give. Sigh not, too weak, but boldly try. You never can begin to live until you dare to die. And I liked this because it shows that PK is willing to try new things, because he's asking the doctor about everything. The boxer Hoppy about everything that he knows. And it also relates to us, because we're the only thing limiting ourselves. If we set our minds to something, we can do it within reason, and that people are too afraid of the consequences to move on and experience life as it should be.
They think the consequences are holding them back, and they should just let it go, and then they can move on.
So I quite liked that for them, relating to
that's
the quote.
Good.
That kind of ties in with Hoppy trying to, like, you know, follow, or not Hoppy, PK trying to follow Hoppy's lead of, like, you know, having courage, being brave.
Yeah.
He's trying to, like, try everything he can.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. PK probably wants to become a boxer like Hoppy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I am the diction detective for this podcast. And so the first one that I had is Bodhi, which is defined in the back of the book as brother. So Hoppy refers to PK as little Bodhi multiple times when they're interacting. And this shows how Hoppy is just kind of treating him like a little brother. And it's sort of following the trend of towards this beginning of this chapter and a couple of the chapters before, he starts meeting people who start treating him as an equal. And it really surprises him, but it's a good surprise. And he just feels like an actual human being instead of just trash like he did when he was being bullied by the judge. And so the next one is PK, he refers to Hoppy's words when Hoppy's giving him an advice as, quote, a seed pod with wings. They flew straight out of his mouth and into my head where they germinated in the rich, fertile, receptive soil of my mind. Showing just how much Hoppy will affect PK's ambitions in the future as he plants the seed of his advice into PK's young growing mind. And then my next one is Cooley slash Chara. Now, Cooley isn't defined in the back of the book, but Chara is, and Hoppy shows that they're the same thing. And so it refers to people of Indian descent who, judging by Hoppy's interactions, also seem to be treated as inferior, kind of like the whites to the African people or the judge to PK. And it's just following that trend of showing the racism and discrimination that's kind of very apparent in Africa at this time.
All right, and then I was the artist and I drew the boxing match, like the ring, and then with Jack Hammer Smith's Hoppy inside the ring, and then Big Hedy and PK outside the ring. And I just drew this because I thought this was an important event in the story, because like this was so far in the book was probably the most like exciting and fun event for PK in his life, because he had something to cheer for and someone he cared about was like doing something with like purpose. Like he wanted Hoppy to win this match. I feel like he felt like Hoppy in this was kind of like his older brother. And Hoppy was kind of like, he could see like Jack Hammer's like all the people that made fun of him were like bigger and older than him, and Jack Hammer's bigger than Hoppy. So it could be like Hoppy's like representing PK, like beating the all the people that made fun of him, like mm-hmm. kind of fighting back, like Hoppy's like showing him like this is what you can do, like if you become successful like me. And you take, like, everything in the past, it can build you up into a good boxer. And I just thought this was a fun part in the book, because I thought this is, like, when the intensity in the book picked up and where things really started to get rolling with, like, the characters and stuff. And you could see the storyline starting to plot out where, like, since Hoppy bought PK the boxing gloves and the shoes. And I just thought this was a good part in the book.
This part of the book also, I think, highlights the meaning of the power of one.
Yeah.
One purpose, one goal, one mind, one body. It can do pretty much anything that it wants to. And if you believe in it, you can do it.
All right. So
one more thing I had for Diction Detective was at the end of chapter 8, PK, he's feeling really down because of everything that's happened, losing all those people. And he describes his feeling as stone birds in stone nests laying stone eggs, just showing how heavy his emotions weigh on him, which is really just kind of a sad thing to think of a six-year-old experiencing and thinking about. But then he also says that as he sat on the high rock on his hill, as the sun began to set over the bushveld, he grew up just like that. The loneliness birds stopped laying stone eggs. They rose from their stone nests and flapped away on their ugly wings, and the eggs they left behind crumbled into dust. He said that he knew that they would be back, but for the moment, he was alone, and that he had permission from himself to love whomsoever he wished, and that the cords that bound him to the past had been severed, so that he wasn't defined by what happened in his past. Sure, he would take the advice from those people, but losing them wouldn't hold him back, and he would travel into his future with the ambition to do better.
All right, so we all agree this is a good place to start the podcast.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So the next podcast, I believe, is Monday. Is that right?
Yeah,
okay, Monday. And I believe we're reading chapters 10 through 14 or 15. So we will be back for podcast number 3.